All right. Welcome everybody to episode 105 of Cycle Jerks podcast. We're very
Holy shit, 105?
105, believe it.
Woo!
So we got Dave and myself here with our guest today, Mackaycee Duncan of Dad Bod Cycling. And Mackaycee, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Great to be here, guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I kind of stumbled on Dad Bod Cycling just randomly in my suggestions field on Instagram. And I just started going through some of your posts and I really identified with it. The show's called Cycle Jerks, but Dave and I are two of the most inclusionary people you'd ever meet. And it's kind of tongue in cheek. We always like to find out, like, when did you first find the bicycle did it start as a young boy or was it more later in life?
I learned to ride a bike when I was 5 years old. And that was actually growing up in Trinidad, which is a Caribbean island. So I learned to ride a bike at five. My brother is 8 years older than me, who still rides with me to this day. We would ride, not knowing at the time, miles and miles and miles and miles on all these adventures. And it wasn't until we started picking up cycling again now that we realized that was like 20, 30 miles we did when I was five and you were 12, 13. You know that, right? So it started from there. Went into other sports, football, basketball, and that's how I got like the bigger frame until recently, maybe 2019 was when I don't know what did it, but I literally sent out a message to a group of my friends. Hey, let's pick up cycling. Let that be the next thing. We would play football every Saturday and something just said, let's do cycling. So I came up with this entire database of, okay, we need a helmet. Hey, I see these guys in Lycra. I'm going to price how much that stuff is. Hey, these guys have clipping pedals and shoes. Let's just start from there. And I was just hooked.
Wow. Yeah. So
bear with me. Where is this happening now? You said Trinidad. Where are you now?
Well, I moved to Brooklyn when I was 7 years old and then got married and moved to the Bronx. So this is all happening while
New York City.
The Bronx, New York City.
Yeah.
Pandemic, I moved to a suburb maybe an hour and a half out of New York City. So that's where I am at right now.
Which is where? I'm from Long Island, so I'm good. Don't tease me.
So do you know where Woodbury Commons is? I live in Orange County, which is 12 minutes from Woodbury Commons.
Oh, man. Are you being flooded out right now?
Yes. So my commute to work today was insane.
Oh, my God.
Home, I was absolutely fine. So I had no clue until I started driving. So I live in the South Bronx. So my commute today was insane.
Right. Yeah. Right. Mike, you may not follow it. They're just getting unbelievable rain there. And I can't, as a New Yorker, if you will, I can't help but stay dialed into the news there. So I wish you guys well back there because it looks nasty.
It seems fine now, but like just to drive this morning, I guess people are recuperating from yesterday. Yesterday was the major flooding happened.
Okay, got it.
Everything seems fine now.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we had a really rough winter out here in California, but rough by California standards, you know.
All right. So now you got this note out to your friends, right? And say that we need how many people are we talking about?
So I send this to 10 people. My brother has no choice. Whatever I think you're doing. Like you have no choice.
Yeah.
So I'm like, hey, I'm buying my bike on this day. I'm buying your bike too.
Oh.
I've saved up enough money for two bikes, two entry-level road bikes. So you have no choice. I always tell them, you're under contract.
Right.
You're under contract for the warranty of that bike, which is 10 years. So you're mine. I say we're riding on Saturday. Right. We're riding on Saturday. You have no choice. So I get him the bike, and I get two of my other friends to bike completely. They all got kits. They all got helmets. I've been pushing at my brother to get clipped in. He finally did that last month. So like we're all in now. And I'm just like, I need an aspect of this to get people involved. Why don't people know about how exciting and fulfilling this is? And then I think about we grew up in Brooklyn, and I've never heard anything about cycling in Brooklyn, the sport of cycling. It's always basketball. It's always football, baseball. Nothing was ever introduced to us about cycling. Why don't kids know about this? Mm-hmm. I see so many athletic phenoms in the neighborhoods. Why don't they know about cycling? Why aren't they given an opportunity to be cyclists? And again, I created this database. It's because of how expensive it is to get into the sport, yeah, to even get a bike. So that's why I started the charity aspect of Dad Bod Cycling. Let's get these kids on bikes. Let's show these kids how fun even just riding a regular bike could be. Thinking about all these adventures I had as a kid, even though it was in Trinidad, it's like, it's still things I remember vividly to this day. And I was a 5-year-old. Yeah. So that's the giving aspect of Dad Bod Cycling.
Right.
Yeah. And what is the name of the foundation, and how can people contribute?
The name of the actual, well, it's Dad Bod Cycling, and it's called Change the Cycle. So it's pretty much just thinking about changing the narrow thought process of it's only basketball, football, or baseball in the inner city. There are other sports, there are other avenues that can be explored. So Change the Cycle is just a way to get kids introduced to cycling, introduced to having a bike, maintaining a bike, riding a bike safely. So I plan on just having this whole giant giveaway event once I do raise the funds, do find all the partnerships, and hopefully they get bitten by the cycling bug like I did.
Yeah. We had I don't know if you're familiar with Jeff Lenoski, but Jeff is he's a professional mountain biker, and he's a coach, and he does trials where they go over obstacles and whatnot. And that's how he kind of became famous. But he's also a very accomplished trail rider, and he has a thing called Trail Boss, but he works with a company, Candaid, and they've given out this year, they're going to hit 10,000 bikes donated to kids. Wow. Around the US. And so, yeah, it's amazing. And so you're not alone, is what I was going to say. And so much of us in America, you know, the cyclist is somewhat of an outcast in a lot of ways, specifically with drivers. But yeah, to your point though, cycling is amazing. It makes you feel good. It helps you with your physical, your mental health. And it's just a great way to explore and have adventures of your own instead of looking at someone else's adventures.
It's funny you say that, like, because you think about the adventures that you had. When I was a kid, it was a big deal that we all bought 10 speeds, right? But they were the drop handlebar ones. And at that time, you know, there were no helmets and you didn't clip in and all that other stuff. But for us, it was during the summer, it was just like, hey, let's ride to the mall. Like, now our parents wouldn't have let us go outside the neighborhood, but now we have these bikes and we're riding to the mall. And an hour adventure out. We thought, you know, we're a big deal. But we would just go. We didn't have any money. We weren't going to buy anything, but it was a reason to get on the bike and go, you know. And then the nearest 7-Eleven was miles away. Let's go get a Slurpee, right? It was a reason to get on the bike. And it was so, you know, a group of five guys, it was so exhilarating just to go. It was something to do, right? And that's why I think, I don't know why people don't see that. And obviously I'm biased, but I wasn't a cyclist then. It was just something different, something to do. And so you're on the right set. You got to just get people exposed to it, I think.
I feel like once you truly have your own bike and your own way of just getting up and going and creating these memories, it's like you get hooked. Yeah. And it's not like you're getting hooked on something bad. It's exercise, it's exploration, it's meeting new people. The amount of people that I've met just by having this bike, I don't own the most expensive bike in the world. It's an entry-level bike. I paid $1,500. I saved up for it. I researched what I wanted. And I've met countless nice people just by having this bike. By riding an hour out of New York City, I meet these people from Jersey, from every borough, just like, and we start a conversation simply by the bike. I like your water bottle. I love your helmet. I love your kit.
Right.
These are people I talk to 2 years later from that one, hey, I like this that you have, and they're great people.
Yeah. Yeah, the cycling community is very generous and friendly, supportive for the most part. You know, obviously there's exceptions just like anything else, but yeah, that's one of the things that is most rewarding is just networking and meeting new people that share this passion that you have. And it's so so easy to build friendships when you have something that's so important to you that is also so important to them. And then whatever other differences you have, whatever, it's all good, you know, right? Because we share this thing together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Special.
So I don't want to get off of the foundation. I'd actually like to come back to it, but I want to hear more about your backstory. So you, something possessed you. I think you said you don't know what, but that was, so you've been at this now, what, 3 years? Or it was your goal?
I started right before the pandemic. So it was generally, I'm a new father. Well, not new anymore. I have a 6-year-old. I have a almost 4-year-old and a newborn on the way. So I'm telling myself, okay, football and basketball are contact sports.
Yeah,
I'm not in it to get hurt anymore. I don't want to be limping in the house on a Saturday to then have to play with 3 kids. That's not going to work. What is something I can do to still remain active, stay healthy, but still get that mental health escape that I was getting from football and basketball? And I just landed on cycling. I think I was just watching GCN. I was on YouTube and GCN came up. And I just watched one video, and then another video, and then another video. And next thing you know, I'm 15 videos in on GCN. And I'm thinking to myself in a British accent now. And I'm like, I'm saying aluminium instead of aluminum. And all
that's awesome. Yeah,
it's just, and that just sent me on a rabbit hole of, okay, what bike can I get? What's the price range of this bike? And that just, it just went on and on and on and on until I actually got the bike and went on my first road bike ride. So where I move now, it's like a hilly area. My first ride was 8 miles with 1,000 feet of elevation. So during the ride, I'm like, I'm 245 pounds at this time. I'm built like a football player.
Yeah.
But when I get done, it's like this feeling of, I did it. I got it done. I just rode 8 miles. To me, that was like, I rode 8 miles. I couldn't think of doing that any other time. Mm-hmm. So I just got hooked.
Right.
Right. So it's interesting because I would say that you brought it up. So please don't take this, but you're not built like a cyclist, a typical cyclist.
Not at all. I have shoulders and I can bench press 275 pounds and all this other stuff. So I'm not built like your typical cyclist. And I feel like I know that, and I knew that from the beginning, but I never saw it as a disadvantage. I just saw it as a challenge. Like, okay, I live in this hilly area. If I want to get better at this, I have to climb these hills. Yeah. We're going to struggle. Like, I see people fly by me on these hills that are half my weight, half my size. It's never anything that discouraged me, but I enjoy what I'm doing. I enjoy the art of cycling, the nuances of cycling. So for me to say, okay, you're not built for this, don't do it, it's not the case. I enjoy doing it. Nothing is going to discourage me from doing it.
Yeah. And thank you, because as soon as I said it, I felt, what an asshole. Why did I just say a typical cyclist? Right? That's just an effed up thing to say, because there shouldn't be that kind of thing. If you just want to get on the bike, and that's, you know, I consider myself very inclusive. And so for me to say that, I feel like an idiot. But I mean, you've got it right. It doesn't matter. You know, if you just get on the bike and get the experience and get that sense of accomplishment, right? Whether you're light, heavy, small, tall, you know, it doesn't matter. Just get on the bike. So
and one of the things I've gotten from quote unquote, the negative responses is that, oh, you should be skinny if you're doing all this riding. You got to start somewhere. If you're 250 pounds and you buy a bike, you're not going to be 175 pounds immediately.
Yeah.
You got to ride the bike. Right. I've been on for 3 years now, and I'm 20 pounds down, and I'm still not built like a cyclist.
Right.
Right.
Better shape than I was when I started, but I started. And I feel like that's the issue, is that people need to understand that it takes a little push to start. And if I can be that positive influence in some kind of way to say, you could do it. So what? You're 250 pounds. Try it. See it. Yeah. See if you like it. If you love it, keep going.
Well, clearly people are responding. You know, your Dad Bod Cycling Instagram, you're almost 5,000 followers at this point. And it's a universal message that hits, I think it really hits a lot of people that need the message, you know, whereas, you know, you see some skinny type A, you know, whatever, saying, oh, you should do this, you know, and for someone that can't even envision themselves in that body because they were gifted with a sturdy frame that they could play football and whatever else, that little skinny cyclist, he's not on the football field. So, you know, but so he kind of tends to alienate, or that person, the image of that kind of alienates a lot of people that maybe would be cyclists. And that's what I think is so great about your page. And some of the things that you talk about, like we have a guest coming on next week. She's been on before, but this gal, Marie Soleil Blaze, and she went from a world level track athlete to now she's doing these bike packing races. And she was talking about just the turning the devices off. And I noticed you just had a post about this where you're like, oh, I'm officially out of Strava. I'm going back to, you know, just enjoying myself. And her thing was more on a training side with FTP. She turned it off and actually increased her FTP by 18%. And and Dave and I like to focus on mind over matter and mental gymnastic. You talk about cycling, there's different things you can learn and the art of it. A lot of it is mental. And that's something that, you know, you can play games with your body physically by moving around, changing your position at the handlebars and saddle, standing up, sitting down, whatever. But it's the games that you play in your head where you could really see some significant gains as well. And so I thought that was really interesting. Would you consider coming back on Strava, or are you thinking, you know what, I think I'm just done with that part of it?
So with that, I still kept the free version of Strava where I can go through and like everyone's posts just to see everyone's miles. Like, I draw a lot of encouragement from seeing everyone else's miles and,
oh yeah,
oh, this did this today, that I got to get out and ride today if you did this. So it's, yeah, like I kept the free version, but I didn't keep the, you're trending faster in this, your power is increased over here. I'm training for SBT gravel, which is my first gravel race. So I was training for that, and everything was numbers, 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 numbers. So being able to turn that off for that particular ride, and I made that particular post, it was like, I was able to hear my thoughts a lot clearer, which is the mental aspect. Instead, yeah, of looking down at the numbers and my power while I'm climbing, I'm not looking down. I'm looking at where I'm going, I'm talking to myself, okay, a little more power here. Okay, get a little smoother here. It seemed like my thoughts cleared up instead of just focusing on my head unit and every number on the head unit. So going back to, I guess, the paid subscription, I don't think so. The only thing I truly miss is being able to make routes on Strava. Anything else, I'm having more fun this way. I'm still getting my training and I'm still increasing my fitness, but it's like I'm having more fun. It's less of a demand and more of a joy. I was reintroduced to the joy of cycling in on that day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can get lost in the data, and I'm sure, like, if you do a group ride, every once in a while you run into somebody and they're just like rattling off all their, PR, the KOM, and the blah, 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 blah. You know, it's just like, man, whoa, you know, you're way deep in it. I'm kind of like, I get all the data, but I don't really spend a lot of time with the data. And then we have Dave and I have this dear friend Claire. She's an amazing cyclist, and she rides with her Garmin in her pocket. So she just doesn't, it looks like she doesn't have anything going on, and she's not paying attention to any of that stuff, but she's still collecting the data. And I don't know what she does with it, but I don't think very much. And you know, but it's weird because I just got a new bike and it doesn't have power, you know, and I've been riding it around and having a blast on this bike. And I've been thinking like, should I get, I mean, I should probably get a power meter. It's like, you kind of want to know, but you don't want, it doesn't have to drive the whole experience. You know, there's moments like if you're going out for a serious, let's say you're going to do some interval training, you know, obviously at that point, it's good to know like, hey, I'm going to kick it up to whatever wattage for 3 minutes and then drop down for a minute and then go for another three. It's a great tool in that regard. But I mean, I think any cyclist can relate to that post that you posted, because we do tend to get lost in the data sometimes. And
it's the burnout. You get burnt out. It's easy to get burnt out with cycling, especially if you're training for something in particular. It's all right. Is it here yet? Is it time for the race? Like, I've been training for this for 6 months and still not here. Yeah. So I feel like I got to that point, and I got to the point where, okay, now I can differentiate between, this is specifically a training ride. I'm going to maintain this amount of power. This, like you said, this amount of time, I'm going to do this many intervals. This is a mental health ride. I'm riding just to be out of the house, be free, enjoy the scenery. I can push hard, but I don't need to say, okay, I need to get to this amount of watts. I'm just riding.
Yep. And that kind of speaks to that that post you had about group rides versus solo rides.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I always tell everybody, you know, cycling's like my therapist, it's my church. I just go out there and it's me and the bike and the mountain. And, you know, there's this solitude and this peace that I have in it, even though you're hurting yourself sometimes. There is a peace that comes with that. And I would just really identify with your posts. I think you nail a lot of salient topics that a lot of us cyclists really wrestle with.
One topic that I maybe you covered it in one of your posts, but you mentioned three kids. Like, where the hell do you find time to get out and ride? And what would be a typical Saturday ride for you? Because I know I got serious about cycling just so that, you know, I mean, I always considered myself a cycling, but I didn't really have the time to do it until I vaguely like started realizing like my kids didn't get up until like 11 o'clock in the morning, you know, and suddenly if I was out at 8 or 9 riding, I could get a couple hours of riding in, and, you know, I'd come home and my, you know, my son would be walking down the stairs in his boxers. He just rolled out of bed. Right. So suddenly it was like, okay, now the world has opened up. I can go ride at 6 and 4. And how do you find the time to do it?
Honestly. So this is my morning commute. This is how I get rides in during the week. So Tuesday, Thursdays, I will drive an hour. My normal commute is an hour and a half. So Tuesday, Thursdays, I will drive the 30 minutes, park right before the Cuomo Bridge, which is the Triborough Bridge, and then I ride into work. So I'll get 26 miles on the way there.
Okay.
Ride back, that's another 26. So I got 50-something Tuesday, Thursday. That's my week. During the week training.
Good on you.
My mom still lives in Brooklyn. My mom and dad still live in Brooklyn. So I pack both the 6 and the 4-year-old up. We get up at 6 a.m. I drive them to Brooklyn. I drop them off at my parents. And I go beat my brother, who also lives in Brooklyn. And we go from there. That's my Saturday ride. So let's say I drop the kids off at 9. I'm on the bike by 10 o'clock.
All right.
Get my Saturday ride in, and then do my hour and a half back home.
Yeah.
Sleep. Well, good.
Having that family nearby sure is important. That's for sure on both fronts, right? To take care of your kids and then also your brother. You got some motivation. Is this your younger brother?
No, he's my older brother.
He's older, eight years, right?
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah, so, yeah. So you got your brother. He's under contract. What about all the other friends that were on the list? Are they still with you?
So Friday? These are friends that see me and they're like, "Are you really rode 50 miles today?" I'm like, "Yeah, come on. We've got an extra bike in my brother's basement." So it's like,
"Yeah,
you want to try it out? I've got a bike. I've got a helmet. I've got shorts. Let's go."
Yeah.
They go on this one time. I give them maybe a 15-mile route, 15 to 20. They realize that they can't really keep up with us, so they get hooked. I have competitive friends that are like, "Okay, how do I get faster? I want to do this again, but I want to be as fast as you guys."
Yeah.
Goes up with his own bike the next time, his own helmet, his own kit. And that happened at least three times. And so now we've got a crew of five or six of us, and that's just our core that we always ride. So every Saturday that I'm in Brooklyn, that course together, and we just make it happen.
Nice. Yeah. And what was the inspiration to start? Okay, so I get you for whatever reason you had this epiphany, I want to try this. You get you GCN, you know, the but now you start documenting this on Dad Bod Cyclist, right? Or cycling. I'm sorry, Dad Bod Cycling. What was the inspiration to start getting you to do that?
I saw the motivational aspect of it. There are people that would see us and realize these guys don't look like your average cyclist. So I get people asking questions. "Oh, what made you get into this? Oh, how much do you need for this? What do you need for that?" And I realized, okay, this is encouraging people. Maybe this can be a positive thing. I try to be a positive person in any aspect I can be. So if this can, I told myself, if this can help people, why not? Why not just record ourselves riding? Why not show that we did 25 miles and take a picture at the George Washington Bridge to show, okay, you can do it. I did it. You can do it. 25 miles sounds like a lot, but once you get into it, that's the warm up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just about more people on bikes. You're not, I mean,
people
this,
on bikes. You, the more you, people you, on bikes that I can get, the better.
You've got a separate job. You're just doing this because you want to help and motivate other people.
I'm an occupational therapist by day. I work with special needs kids, but I also see that as I get kids moving during the day for a living, and I see the positive aspects it has on them.
Yeah,
I tell my coworkers, the staff here, whenever they complain about, "Oh, I need to start working out," buy a bike. I can send you that. I can send you a cheap one, used one, a brand new one, whatever you can afford, as long as you just get on the bike and get going. Like, you will see the positive aspects immediately. It's going to hurt. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
You're going to hurt when you first start, but there are more positive aspects than negative by far.
So where did the dad bod cycling term come up? Did that get coined at some point, or was it more like, "Hey, I got a dad bod and I'm going to be a cyclist, so I'm just going to call it dad bod cycling"?
I looked at my brother. He looked at me. It's like, what are we going to call this? What do we both have in common? He said, that gut. Okay. These are my literal words. "I have a dad bod. Leave me alone. Yeah. I have children. I eat when I'm tired, and I'm always tired." So that's how dad bod cycling.
Right. Well, it's amazing what you built in just a couple years, really. I mean, that, like I said, I just think it resonates with so many people. And I always try to be encouraging to any cyclist that I encounter on the road, you know, whether it be a larger rider or somebody really struggling on a climb or, you know, whatever. I'm always just trying to help somebody on the side of the road that's got like a blown out tire or something, you know.
Yeah, McCase, you said that, you know, the reason I'm intrigued by this is I used to own a bike shop, and one of the things that I did at the bike shop, and I'm actually quite stoked because we're bringing it back, was I started group rides. And I'll never forget the first time we did it, we had, I think, seven people showed up. And three of them were my friends. They were just there because, you know, like, okay, we're here to support you. So, but before the pandemic, We were up to, on average, I would say 50 people on a Sunday, 40 to 45. And I was kind of sad. 60 to 80, what, 60, 70 wasn't uncommon if it was a really good day and I picked a great route. But, you know, 50 plus was the average. But wow. The key thing about this was it was about kind of exactly what you're driving at. It ultimately evolved to four groups. So there was two 55 mile groups, but they were different speeds, a 45 mile group, a 30 mile group. And if someone showed up with a basket on their bike and wanted to ride five, I would ride with them. It was all about inclusion, and it was all about finding a speed and a distance so that everyone felt comfortable coming out. And so this is why if I'm asking a lot of questions, we're relaunching this, and I'm pretty stoked about doing it and the format. So I'm very much on board with what you're saying. It doesn't matter what you're riding. It doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter, but it, you know, just come out and ride. Right. So
yeah. It's unfortunate that there's such a judgmental side to things, which I don't think people realize how discouraging that could be to someone that doesn't necessarily have the confidence built up to say, okay, I'm going to do this and stick to it. So my replies to most of the negative comments are, thank you for your opinion, safe riding. And if I see one person that's like a true cyclist, I can tell you're a cyclist, your page isn't private or anything, you're an actual avid cyclist, I'd say, why not respond to this in a positive manner? You never know who's looking at you for encouragement. You never know who's on your page looking at you as their goal as, oh, I want to be like this guy. I want to do what he's doing, and see you respond to my post in a negative manner and just completely give up. It seems so unnecessary to me.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I felt like your responses to these some of the trolls, you know, I felt like your responses were really spot on, and you kept it positive, even with these people where they're just being really shitty about something kind of silly. And that's something that I'm always looking to do in my posts also, is like really keep it positive, shine a light. And most of the most of the community is supportive, so I think it resonates. But
yeah,
it's weird when people get on these benders and, you know, go all negative over somebody. You're on this journey, you know, with the bicycle, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful to see and to follow along, you know, and for someone just to come in and, you know, kind of shit on it. It's like, yeah, geez.
Man. It's the dark underbelly of social media, really. You know, it's just, there's so many positive things about it, but why? Mike, we were on another topic yesterday that we shouldn't bring up now when we were chatting, but you got the same thing, right? So people feel so empowered and emboldened to say shitty, stupid stuff when, you know, God, I don't know, whatever. Stop me now. Stop me now.
Well, in a way, McKay, I think it's it represents a level of success, right? Because you have taken this idea and you've turned it into something that's inspirational, and it's you're building something. And for me and my own social media world, I don't really get trolls, because I feel like the only people that are following me are people that know me. So the comments tend to be from people I know. It's rare that I get a comment from somebody I don't know. Whereas here, you've taken it, people are responding, you've got this audience now. And so obviously, you know, if you got 5,000 people, there's bound to be 5 or 10 people in there that are just going to be a problem. So
pretty much, but
it's a sign of success.
I've been blessed with the type of personality that I can just look at that and be like, all right, good for you, moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
positive.
Yeah. So be dismissive and still wish them well.
Chest, yeah. If it made you get that off of your chest, to me, more power to you.
Right.
Right.
Well, let's talk about your cousin Mark. Because I love that post. I'm just like, boy, this guy's going to get some humble pie.
I am waiting for Mark. Mark thinks he is an all-around athlete, and he has been my entire life. He has been this college football player, college basketball player, and I'm just telling him, this is different. Mm-hmm. I played college football and basketball as well. We've played against each other all our lives. This is different. You are going to be humbled. Please approach this in a humble manner. And he's just like, no, I'm going to finish. This is what he ended up on. I'm going to finish any ride that you put in front of me, and I'm going to keep up with you. And I'm just like, okay. Have you ever ridden a road bike before? He's like, right. No, I don't own a road bike. I say, okay, I'm not going to put him down. I'm not going to discourage him.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, it's going to get someone else into the sport. Yes. If I have a cousin that's addicted to cycling as well, I'm happy. Yeah. But just know that you're going to hit the bottom of the barrel before you get to that point.
Yeah. Well, it'll be nice that he's got someone like you to deliver the humble pie in a way that's also encouraging, you know. But I always tell people, you know, on the bike, there's nowhere to hide. You know, you can't hide. If you're on a team sport and you're playing football, I mean, every once in a while you get out on an island, but for the, you know, you can hide a lot of times. On the bike, on the hill, it's you and the mountain, and good luck. You know?
I'm going to be at the top waiting for you, looking at you, contemplate, am I going to get off and push?
Uh-huh.
I'm going to push through. And I'm going to be recording you because of the way you talked about this.
Yeah.
My phone is going to be out pointing down the hill, just waiting for you to make that decision. So,
well, in a way, I love his mindset, right? He's got the right mindset. And obviously, being a college football and basketball player, he knows how to push through, how to excel. And so a lot of the mental elements are there. It's just the physical. There's, you know, it's watts per kilo at the end of the day. And so if you haven't been putting in that work, you're not going to be able to hang.
The last time I weighed myself, I may be down to 213 now. He's maybe at 195 at the least.
Yep.
So I just feel like it's a different type of training. It's different leg muscles. Like you probably have quads or calves from football and basketball, but it's like they haven't been working in the cyclist way.
Right.
So good luck to him. I'll be a positive reinforcement, but you'll see how that goes.
So, hey, I think this will come. I'm sorry to drop off your cousin, but you just said, you were 240. Right? Is that what you 245 and you're down to 213?
213, yes, sir.
Was that the goal, or is that a byproduct of
it's just a byproduct? Like, it's me trying to get better at this, me not necessarily wanting to win any races, but I want to be the best me I can be as a cyclist. That just turned into I'm riding more. I'm riding 50 miles per day during work day type of thing twice a week. I'm drinking so much water. I'm eating a lot better because I don't want to feel sluggish while I'm doing this. So it's the byproduct of just trying to be the best me, and the weight just fell off.
And that's, I think that's a really important message. I think because two things. Well, first of all, I think a lot of people give up because they, they'll be like your cousin potentially, right? Like, oh, okay, I'm going to go out and ride 50 miles today. And it's like, no, just go out and ride 10. Right. Or, you know, it's like the runner, like anyone could get up and run 5 miles, but we're going to hurt the next day. Right. So start slow and build up. And I think people get discouraged, right? Because they, you know, they did 50 miles and now they're all knackered the next day. But by the same token, I think people almost in a sense think of it as a miracle drug. Well, I'll go out and start riding and then I'm going to lose weight. Well, no, just ride for the enjoyment of it, right? Ride because it's fun. Ride because you're with friends. Ride because you'll see things that you don't normally see. eventually the weight will come, but don't do it for that reason, right? Just to your point, be the best of you that you can be. And I think it, all that good stuff that cycling has will eventually come. It's just, but don't do it for that. Do it because it's really cool. It's fun to do.
Yeah.
And then you learn about like the nutrition side of cyclists. So in my mind, it's like, okay, I've got to do this without eating if I want to lose weight. No, you better eat or you're going to pass out.
Yeah.
You constantly eat. I have the head unit alarm for every 30 minutes fuel. You take in so much food on this bike that people just consider that, how are you even losing weight? I have more energy to ride more miles. Therefore, I get better at it. Therefore, the weight gets up. I'm able to ride more miles.
You can probably relate to this, but when I lived on Long Island, I did the Five Boroughs bike tour.
Yep.
Right. So, and it was funny. I was that guy that I had the bike, but like 38 miles, like, wow. Right. So, we got to the first rest stop and the lines were so long. Right. And I said to my buddy, skip it, man. We'll grab a deli. So there's a deli on every corner in New York. We'll just get food there. Well, everyone had the same idea. And so every time we went to stop for food, the lines were too long. We hit the Verrazano Narrow Bridge and we had to climb up this thing. And I'm like, it took everything I had. And then we got to that was the first time I bonked, right? Because to your point, we were sitting on waiting for the ferry to take us back. And I was laying on the thing and my friend was like, hey, the ferry's coming. I'm like, I'm not moving. I'm just laying there. I was so dead. I really never been that. Oh, the feeling of that, because I hadn't eaten and I just didn't even want to move. I was like, fine, just leave me here. I'll come back tomorrow, you know? So anyways, I digress, but yeah, that's it. You don't diet on the bike, whatever you do, diet off the bike maybe, but don't do it on the bike.
Yeah. Well, and you bring up something that I think is really important about it is, you know, once you start cycling, your relationship with food changes a little bit, right? It doesn't happen for everybody. And certainly there's varying levels of it, but you know, you start realizing like, hey, if I have a couple beers tonight, I'm going to have a real hard time tomorrow. Or if I have this cake, you know, you start looking at it like, you know, it's your body's a fuel tank. And, you know, I mean, we all stray. And Dave's notorious. Every Friday he does donuts. And we've had this physical therapist who's a coach, and her name's Dara Richmond. And she says, eat the damn donut. That's her, you know, her catchphrase, because, you know, a lot of times we can get obsessed about eating clean and always being in this rigid kind of mindset of I'm riding tomorrow. So I definitely don't want to have any beers or whatever. Where her thing is, hey, you're not a professional athlete. You put in a lot of work, you know, don't starve yourself. If the donut is the thing, then eat the damn donut and don't feel guilty about it because you're putting in a lot of work and doing it. So obviously you don't want to eat the damn donut every single day, but yeah, the relationship with food is a big one, you know, and I feel like a lot of people do struggle with that. And just getting out, doing something physical can make you think about food in a different way. You know, I'm always looking to try to get if I'm going to eat something, I want to get a little protein, and you know, that's going to help me recover. And it doesn't drive everything I stuff in my mouth, but I would say most of it I'm thinking that way, you know, and that's a healthy way to be, you know.
It with me, it stopped me from, I was never really a big drinker, but I'm down to nothing now. Like I don't drink on a Friday night because I know Saturday is my big endurance day. Yeah, maybe I want to have a beer. Not today. I'll have it tomorrow after the bike ride. Yeah. And then tomorrow after the bike ride comes in, it's just like, just give me water.
Yeah.
I drink more hydration mix than anything else now. So it's like, you do it to fuel the cycling. Again, I don't want to keep saying an addict, but you become an addict, not in a bad way, but it's like, it's something positive to be addicted to. I can say I'm positively addicted to cycling. It drives a lot of my tendencies in life, a lot of my everyday tactics, but I feel like it's made me more of an organized person. I'm able to say, I'm going to do this because of this, and I'm going to do it at this time because of this. It brings a lot of my life into a perfect timeline where I'm able to function more efficiently. And if people ask me, like, why do I cycle? It's like, it's turned my life into a more positive thing. Like, I've met so many positive people. I've changed as a person. I feel like I'm so much more of a patient person because of those challenges, like going up a hill or a long distance ride. You become patient with yourself. If you become patient with yourself, I feel like you become patient with everyone else.
Yeah.
I can just keep going on and on of the positive changes that cycling has made in my life, but that's why I do it. I highly recommend it to everyone else.
Well, you know, it's funny you bring up addiction, because when we were naming the, when we, you know, we, this is our, we're in like 2 years of this, but when we first started, came up with the idea of doing a podcast, the first name that came up was Cycle Junkies, because, you know, you become, you know, easily addicted. It's a great addiction, but it's, that was one of the names that we thought. And then we ended up settling on Cycle Jerks. And sometimes I regret Cycle Jerks, just because, you know, to some of those haters in your threads, you know, there are those guys out there, you know, or gals, there's people out there that are, you know, angry about whatever, but that's not us. But we did it as tongue in cheek. And hopefully that comes through in our podcast. I mean, like I said, we're on episode 105. I think our audience understands that we're not jerks, you know, and we're just about promoting cycling and getting different viewpoints and angles exposed, stories of inspiration, whether it be athletes or somebody like yourself that's going through this journey with the bike. We just try to bring all elements and inspire people to get out there and pedal. And I do have people though in my life sometimes that say, why'd you call it Cycle Jerks? It just sounds so, you know. And I was just like, well, you know, that's what people, I think a lot of people in their car, you know, and they say, oh, this jerk on the side of the road or whatever, you know, they get so angry because they got to get to work or whatever, and you're in their way. But yeah, but it is definitely addictive, and it's a great addiction, and it spills over. Your point about being organized, I think that's huge, because, you know, there's a lot of little things that you have to have with you on your bike. And if you're a dad, you got kids, you got mama, you got this schedule, you got, and you want to get this objective done on your bike. So you can't be dilly-dallying with all of your nutrition and your water bottles. And you got to get all that stuff buttoned up. So it's like, when it's time to go, all that stuff's there, boop, 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 boop. And then you're on the bike and you're going. And so much of that translates to other elements in your life where, you know, if I'm going to ride more, well, I need to spend less time doing this. So how do I spend less time doing that? Well, maybe I reorganize that part of my life and get that dialed, like I have my cycling part of my life dialed. And yeah, it's something that it comes it's hat in hand with any of these endurance sports that require a lot of time.
You know? It's literally done the night before.
Yeah.
Like those Saturday rides, it's like when you're packing two girls up, like their clothes have to be packed.
That's right.
I have girls, so I have to do their hair in the morning. I have to feed them in the morning. I have to make sure the toys are packed, tablets are charged. In no way or form can I do anything bike related the morning of. It has to be the night before. Right, so my nutrition, my bike is set up, my bike is prepped, cleaned. All that is done the night before after they go to bed. The morning of is dedicated to the actual kids. So if I forget something the night before, it's not happening. You have to be on point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, question. You mentioned road, right? Yeah, you got a road bike, and then you said you were training to do SBT gravel. Tell me about that. And are you doing events, or are you still? I mean, Was that just a one-time thing, or you got a goal
the
to
head
do?
Of Ride for Racial Justice, which is Neil Anderson, and oh God, he's gonna kill me. He's gonna kill me. Wait.
Yeah, he is, because we don't edit these things, so we can't pause and let you.
Marcus Robinson. Oh my God, Marcus Robinson and Neil Anderson are the heads for a Ride for Racial Justice, and they have 30 slots for people of color for all over the country. And wow. He encouraged me to apply to do it. I'm like, Marcus, I don't have a gravel bike.
Yeah.
It's like, so what? Marcus, I've never ridden gravel before. So what? So I applied. I told my story. I told them how I feel about inclusion in cycling, encouraging people in cycling, and called me a month later and said, you got it. Start training.
Uh-huh.
So I'm part of the Ride for Racial Justice team. I'm training for this gravel race. I've never done gravel before. I'm not going to do gravel before I actually get there. I don't own a gravel bike. So Cervelo is the sponsor. So I'm going to have a Cervelo bike there. And the first time I touch gravel will be on August 17th when I arrive in Colorado. And the race is August 20th, which is 100 miles on gravel at elevation. Wow. So why not?
FYI, you want to talk about addiction, you're going to have another one. Just, I'm forewarning you now. You might as well start saving the bike N plus one.
I was just about to say, I don't think I can sneak another bike in this house.
Yeah, well, you'll figure out a way.
I got to try to find a way to explain it. So
just making sure that it's the same color as the other bike. And then sometimes they get confused and they don't know that you have two bikes.
Stack
right?
Them right next to each other.
I did such a good job that they just gave it to me. Baby.
Yes.
I didn't buy it. I got sponsored.
You should be proud.
This could be your next post. Did
so well.
Yeah.
Well, hey, so, good luck with that. Really, I think that's exciting. It sounds like that's an amazing. Now, tell me about Ride for Racial Justice, and then I want to make sure we get back to your foundation. So, tell us about
Ride for Racial Justice. Is basically showing that people of color are in these spaces. So, gravel racing. I believe, from what I was told, it's not many people of color in the gravel world. So, this program is just to get people involved, get people hooked, get people participating, and allow other people to see, like, people of color do gravel as well. And if I can be a part of that, I'm very thankful for the opportunity. For so sure. I can't wait. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
One thing about me is that I need to have a goal in mind when I'm training. And this has been a driving force for me since early November, late December, that transition time in New York where it's, you're going from outdoor to the trainer. So that was my push on the trainer all winter. You're getting ready for this. You're getting ready for this. So I can't wait. I'm little over a month away. I'm excited.
All right. Now, I noticed you said it's 100 miles, but these gravel events are notorious for the elevation gain, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing that is a killer. So what is the elevation of this 100 or elevation gain on this 100 mile ride?
I think 6,200 feet.
Okay, so it's not crazy. Not crazy.
That would be the most elevation I've ever done at one time.
He's from New York. He's in New York City, okay? Yeah. There's bridge overpasses, yeah. But there's not a lot of mountains, right?
I've done, I believe, is a little over 3,000.
Okay.
So to add 6,000 to that, it's... To me, that's the bigger hurdle than the 100 miles. I heard 100 miles and said, okay, I've done that before. Can do it again. The 6,000 feet is like, okay, big boy.
Well, some of the pitches you're going to encounter on those gravel roads too, it gets real, real quick. It's going to be a great experience for you. And, you know, to Dave's point, Dave and I are both, you know, cyclists for years, decades, and gravel is something super fun. The vibe, the energy is a lot different than a road race. There's a strong community in road cycling, but definitely there's a little bit more of a party fun element to the gravel people, even though the rides are just gnarly hard. I think you're going to have a great time. It's going to be hard, but I think you're going to get
it. I've had some friends that have done that one too, and they rank it as one of the best that they've ever done. The vibe, the part of the country that it's in, the town, that type of thing. So I think you'll have a blast doing it. So
yeah,
can't wait.
Have you been to Colorado before?
No, never.
Oh, man.
Everything is just so brand new for me with this one.
It's so weird. It's like every direction. Like if you just point your camera and just snap a picture, that could be like a big poster somewhere, like in every direction. It's just gorgeous everywhere you look, especially you get up in the mountains. It's spectacular. Beautiful country.
Nice.
But the air is thin. So yeah, there's gonna be a lot of firsts going on, but yeah. Yeah, I think you're gonna have a great time. And a quality bike to do it on. So yeah, life is good. That's pretty cool. So they have 30 slots for big events all across the US.
I think SBT is their major event. That's what they do. But I see people from the past years that have gotten chosen, like they go back to other events, and the camaraderie that's created, it seems to just stick forever. So
yeah,
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap. I mean,
let's talk about the foundation.
Yes.
So what's the name of it again?
Change the Cycle. So I've raised $1,600 so far of my $5,000 goal. My goal is to get 20 bikes and just break it down and give them away. I also want to give 5 of those bikes to special needs kids because I do work in a special needs population.
Yep.
And I think that would be big to get these kids on bikes as well. I feel like special needs kids, specifically kids with autism and Down syndrome, they're underestimated a lot. And I'm a person that brings out a lot of their talent. And I know that a lot of these kids can ride bikes, but they're just not given the opportunity.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like, if I introduce this to them, it's going to be a game changer. So yeah, that's one of the biggest aspects to me that's dear to my heart, is to get a lot of these kids on bikes that haven't been either able to get bikes or haven't had the belief in them that they can ride a bike. So I'm getting there slowly but surely. People, again, have been nice and giving and welcoming, and I think it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Where could someone find a link to donate or...
So the link is on Dadbod Cycling Inc. Instagram page, and it's also on GoFundMe if you search Dadbod Cycling.
Okay.
Great. All right.
And your goal is $5,000.
Yes, sir.
Hopefully you get a little spike from the cycle jerks, and we can help you get closer to that goal. Have you got, have you thought about how you're going to disperse them, or how are you going to vet the candidates? Because, obviously you're giving away bikes. You're going to have a lot of people that be anxious to get those bikes.
So I spread the word to a lot of the teachers in my school. So my school is like a network. So there are kids from 5 or 6 different schools, ranging from 5-year-olds to 14-year-olds. Also, the cycling community, I also spread along to a lot of the groups in New York City. Hey, if you know a kid that's deserving, that's really interested in this bike world, and they're not really financially able to just get their first bike, please let me know, nominate them, send them my way, give me a story, a picture, and we'll go from there. I also plan on partnering with my local bike shop, just as, hey, I want to buy 20 bikes from you guys. Can we do something in your parking lot? Can we do something across the street in the park? I don't need much from you. I just turn some music on.
Yeah. Right.
That's it. That's all I ask of you. I have the speaker, or is it okay if I just bring my speaker, play some music? You show these kids how to put on a helmet. I'm here. I have a bunch of friends that are willing to volunteer, and we go from there.
Well, I think what you're doing is really important. And the kids that you're working with that have somebody like you that is encouraging them to explore and expand. And I think it's so important. You know, at, I work for Giant Bicycles as an account executive, and we have an athlete, Rasan Bahati. I don't know if you know Rasan, but Rasan grew up in Compton, and the story was he's a very good kid that got in with some bad people, some young kids, and he was hanging with the wrong crowd, so to speak. And the teacher stepped, one of his teachers stepped in and called the parents down, and he told them, he says, look, I think a lot of Rasan, I think he's got a lot of potential, but I also see there's this thing pulling him in this direction, and I want to try to course correct. And so what I'm offering is we can either play tennis or we can ride bikes. And I'm going to be doing this with Rasan in the afternoons after school to keep him on the straight and narrow. Well, Rasan chose, I think his dad chose bikes. And so there was a track. And so they started going to the track, and the teacher got Rasan a very basic bike, started riding the track. And, you know, he's 10-time national champ. Now, yeah, obviously, not everyone who gets on a bike would even aspire to race. But that's just an example of somebody that's not your parent, that's an adult, that takes an interest in your life and your development and the impact that they can have. And so I applaud you for that. That's really meaningful stuff that you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we all have other jobs that we need to get on with, but Mackesy, it's been really enlightening getting to just following your story and getting a chance to meet you and talk to you. And we wish you nothing but success going forward. And we're definitely going to continue to follow you.
Yeah, it's great to chat with you. Sometimes, I mean, I always eventually come back to it, but I sometimes lose sight of why I'm doing this. And it's not always just for me. It's about helping others. And so hearing your story again is just another reminder for me to get back to business and keep doing what we do and why we do it. So thank you.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, so we're gonna wrap it up here. I want to remind everybody we did start the Cycle Jerks support program. So if you're interested in supporting the podcast, you just go to cyclejerkspodcast.buzzsprout.com, and there's an opportunity for you to support the podcast. And we'll get this, all our episodes drop every Thursday. So we'll have this posted on Thursday. So Mackesy, if you want to, we can create some stuff for you. So if you want to shoot that out to your social channels, cool. We get more people and educated about your story.
I think he knows a little bit about Instagram, Mike. I think he can handle it.
Probably teach me a thing or two, I'm sure. Yeah. But it's been an absolute pleasure, Mackesy. And thank you for taking the time. And best of luck going forward, and SBT gravel, look out.
Good on you, man. Good luck with it.
Thank you, guys.
Yep. All right. Enjoy. With that, I'm going to close it out.